Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riehle 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the German Football Podcast. And for once this week, we're actually not going to be complete football hipsters and, you know, talk about the lower leagues of Hamburg and trips to various places in the north of Germany that no one's ever heard about. And we're gonna go back to our roots. We're gonna talk about the only time that the Bundesliga gets a mention on the European stage and the English speaking stage. Talk about Bayern's seventh Bundesliga title in a row, which was sealed at the weekend of a 3-1 win over Dortmund. So dare I say this is going to be somewhat of a change for us. We're going to have to maybe be slightly serious once people, we might end up surprising people with our lack of knowledge about the top of the Bundesliga. But we'll give it our best go. And to do that, as ever, the two handsome colleagues with me right now start, first of all, on the west coast of Scotland with Mr. Colin Moore. Is that right? Is that where it is? Is that where air is?
I thought you were saying, is that right? Is it Mr. Colin Moore? That's my name, yeah. It's the west coast of Scotland. Of course
it is. Is it the southwest?
Southwest, yes.
Southwest. So
about 40 miles, just under 40 miles south of Glasgow on right. The coast.
Is Ayr a city?
It's a town. It's a large town.
What's the nearest city to Ayr?
Glasgow.
Even southwards?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any cities in Scotland that are further south than Glasgow.
Yeah, but I meant south of the border. Is there anything close?
Oh, no, I mean, Carlisle's I don't know.
Anyway, right, no one cares, right? Colin.
Glasgow is the nearest city, yes.
Right, Colin, how are you? How about I ask you this? You're going to Germany next week. We've all heard privately how excited you are. So give people a little bit of a taster of what's to come.
I was thinking maybe we should leave it as a surprise, but I might as well spill the beans now. Yes, going to Germany next week with my brother. We are going to, I think, about three, four games. Definitely going to Fortuna against Darmstadt on Friday night. So we've managed to secure standing tickets for that at a very cheap €15, which should be a good game. I mean, I don't think Dusseldorf will have anything to play for being the home side, but Darmstadt are right back into promotion contention after winning at St. Pauli, a massive victory for them. And they've got a very favourable home tie against Aue coming this Saturday in the top spiel. So I think there's a good chance that they're going to be going into that second last game with a great chance of promotion and hopefully a big away support, as it's not really too big a distance. And then Saturday, it's Köln versus Wolfsburg. And with the difficulties of getting Köln home tickets, we decided to go via the alternative route of getting away tickets. So that's always quite a good experience, mingling among the away fans and seeing that sort of different kind of atmosphere. I mean, as a Wolfsburg away support, but we'll see. As the last away game of the season, so hopefully they bring a few down south. I was about to say down north. Yes, south from Lower Saxony to NRV.
We're really proving that we're not the best with coordination, navigation on the GPS.
Well, see, that's usually a strength of mine, but you threw me by the whole question about what's the closest city to Ayr, and I'm doubting myself.
The one that always gets me is Ostwestfalen. I actually met someone last night from Ostwestfalen, and it continues to keep me up at night. How you can?
Did you sing the Ostwestfalen Idioten song?
No, but I did. Actually, with friend of the podcast Connor, we were discussing the Dr. Oetker Museum, which is actually in Bielefeld in Ostwestfalen, which is
that's right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes, but to continue, after that, on the Saturday, on the Sunday, got a bit of a typical GFP sort of trip to SK Wattenscheid, former Bundesliga side themselves in the early 90s. And Wattenscheid will be playing Paderborn Spy. You know, I think I've said many times before, my opposition to second teams and the professional setup, or the senior setup. So by that itself, I'll be hoping for a home win. Also, try to see if we can fit in another game. There's a game this Sunday morning. Tusum Essen are playing, who are a seventh tier side, but it's on the way to Wattenscheid from Düsseldorf and Essen. So, opportunity could squeeze that in as well. So, really looking forward to it.
Well, we're all on the edge of our seats, waiting to hear how that all goes down. It seems a lot of German football to digest, especially after how much is six months without being to Germany? Is it 6-7 months?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was
October
first of November. I think I came back, so that was
sure. Yeah,
6 months. Yeah.
Well, we look forward to hearing your tales. And around about 20 meters down the road from me sits Roy Campbell. How are you doing? I'm not recording with you tonight because I'm the host and I take this very seriously. And I knew that you'd distract me too much if we were in the same room. So, alas, you are still in the same postcode. Actually, no, it's one different at the end, isn't it? Anyway, Roy, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I feel like Colin got a more grand entrance than I did. I got a year of it, you know, distraction. But wait, what's your postcode?
I'm not gonna. you never know who's.
What's your bank account?
Mine ends with one. Does yours not end with one?
No, mine ends with three.
Oh wow, you live in a whole different time zone. That's absolutely.
I get jet lagged when I come back from your house sometimes.
Yeah, I think Robert, who lives just 50 yards the other side, he's got a completely different postcode as well. The wonders of Hamburg. But anyway, apart from that, I'm doing okay. But again, far too exciting at work at the moment. Well, I say get exciting. It's kind of getting, do you want to get excited or do you want to just not get excited? But Sky did me one at the weekend. David Kinzombie running up to take his penalty kick in the last minute. And Sky goes. Sky just disappears. It just comes up saying it's changing to the Bundesliga as he's running up to take the penalty kick. So I had no idea that we had scored the fourth and final goal until I managed to figure out how to find Sky Bundesliga 9. So if anyone ever says anything about Sky, the UK's contract with Sky, at least they don't just change when the game's in the middle of a bloody penalty kick. Yeah, definitely. But I hope he's going to still do it, but he said he would. But see if he doesn't. I mean, do you hear that, George? Is that Robert's phone? Robert's phoning you? No?
Yeah, Robert. We've got a Bob on the line to report on his trip to Kiel, which I actually had no idea that he'd done until you told me yesterday. But yeah, here he is chiming in for the full report on his trip to Kiel, against whom they played. I'm not sure, but I'm sure you'll find out right now.
Hello? Hello? Moin moin to all at GFP HQ. It's your boy Bob Haggis here on the line. Just thought I'd update you all about my trip to Kiel. Thought I'd try and keep it short and sweet, as obviously on the last podcast we had Roy, who visited the Holsteinstadion from a media perspective and from a Haasfar perspective, and on Saturday I decided to do it from a fan perspective. And just keep it short and sweet, I'll perhaps do the rating system that we introduced a few weeks ago for our away days. So the first point is food and drink. And as long-time listeners of the podcast will know, veggie options are a very important part of my away days, and I am very happy to let the GFP following know that the veggie train is very much at the Kiel station. They offer Veggie-Wurst and Veggie-Curry-Wurst. They offer Flensburg on tap. And another great part of it is that I think perhaps for the HSV game where Roy was there, it was very busy, but there were about 10,000 people there for the game against Heidenheim on Saturday. So it wasn't particularly busy, and they seemed to have loads of food and drink stands. So it took about, well, especially when I got there just before the game, I literally went straight in and was able to go straight to the front of the queue. But even at half time, when I got a beer as well, the queue was about 2 or 3 minutes long, which is unheard of compared to some of the bigger grounds in Germany. The second point is the game. And I was in the Osttribüne in Kiel, which is where the ultras stand. And I was about 10 rows back, right at the back of the stand. It's a bit of a temporary stand. It's not particularly big. But about to, so I was in the back row, but only about 10 rows back. It's not very far at all. And but it also meant because I was right in the middle, I was right behind all of the flags from the ultras. So I didn't actually see much of the game, particularly on the left-hand side. But from what I did see, I don't think I missed a huge amount. Kiel went in front in the at the start of the second half through Lorenz and were fairly dominant in terms of they had the lion's share of the chances. Heidenheim grew into the game and equalized pretty much out of nothing around 70 minutes, and from then on there was only one team in it with Heidenheim looking very sharp and Kiel just hanging on for a point, which almost takes them out of relegation trouble. It wasn't a particularly good game. I'll give it a 6. I realized I forgot to give a points total to the food and drink, which is very much a 9 from me. And then the atmosphere. Roy was mentioning that the atmosphere wasn't particularly the best at the HSV game, and I think that's just because so many HSV fans are in the Kiel end. I think just with the clubs being so close together and lots of HSV fans being in the area, they know sort of Kiel members who can get them tickets. And funnily enough, that was also mentioned in the program, which is handed out by the ultras just as I entered the stadium. They were saying how there are lots of people there who were either HSV fans or the only things they wanted to say was Scheiß HSV, Scheiß HSV, and not actually joining in on the chants. I really enjoyed the chants from Kiel. The Kiel fans, there were quite a few different ones in there, as well as some of the sort of more well-known ones in German football that quite a lot of clubs use. So some different ones. Seems to be a relatively young crowd as well, so quite a lot of young groups. The carpool was also, I also liked what the carpools were doing. They weren't particularly intense. They were trying to get everyone involved, but not necessarily pressuring people, which ultimately meant that people wanted to get involved as well. Lots of bouncing up and down. And yeah, very much enjoyed my stay. Kiel is a very nice city as well, very peaceful, lots of students. So I would give the atmosphere a 7. I think just mainly because of how small the stand is. I mean, lots of people were getting involved, but it's not the sort of the same size as Schalke where it was deafening and sort of goosebumps. But yeah, I'll give it a 7. So overall, a very worthwhile experience and would recommend.
Anyway, yeah, thanks for that, Robert. Really interesting insight. I hope the listeners enjoyed it as well. But now it's time to get down to business. We're like I said at the start, we've in the last sort of 6 months or so hardly really talked about the top of the Bundesliga, if the Bundesliga at all, as we've ventured into more hipster topics. But I think it's come that time where Bayern have clinched the 10th title in the row. On the weekend, 10 years champions of Germany, you get less than that for murder these days. 10 titles in a row, never been achieved in the top five leagues before. They've got the record for these titles in a row within Europe's top five, but not in the world. So I begin this section of the podcast by posing the question to you two. Which team in the world and in which country hosts the record for the most titles in a row?
Is it Olympiakos.
No, although I was at Olympiakos Stadium at the weekend, which was nice. It's in the nice city of Piraeus, which I would recommend to anyone. Really, really nice place.
I'm going to guess Al Ahly in Egypt.
Nope, that's another incorrect one. I'm slightly surprised to know that you guys didn't get Talia FC of Vanuatu, who won the Port Vila Premier League for 15 consecutive seasons between 1994 and 2009. Although it wasn't as disastrous as the Bundesliga, because then Amakel FC rose to the challenge and actually ended up winning the title for the next six seasons. Although Talia FC have since clambered back up to the top, and I've won it since 2019. Anyway, back to the Bundesliga. Maybe let's start first with the game that won it. I mean, you know, on paper, Bayern beating Dortmund in their own, you know, at the Allianz Arena, you know, a so-called Der Klassiker, I think that ought to be the last mention of that term for the rest of the podcast, to win the title, that it could have been set up as a classic, but I think probably can be characterised as quite the opposite. Fairly flat and dull game, albeit in front of a sold-out Allianz Arena. A very impressive goal through Serge Gnabry, but set the tone for Dortmund's defence, and that all three of the goals are pretty much gifts from BVB. The second goal came from a pretty horrific error from Dan Axel Zagadou. And then before Emre Can pulled one back. Always find it slightly confusing why Emre Can's taking penalties when you've got Royce and Haaland on the pitch, but I suppose that's indicative of a bigger problem at Dortmund, perhaps. And then at that point, Dortmund actually should have had a pretty obvious penalty on friend of the podcast Jude Bellingham, which Daniel Ziva actually admitted after the game that he should have given the penalty, but he had another look at it at VAR at the time and still didn't give it, which is confusing. And then the game finished with Musiala's fifth goal of the season, and as they say in Germany, Roy, das war's. But let's not spend too long on the game. But Colin, would you sort of agree that that it just, given that it was Bayern against Dortmund and Bayern winning the game, it sort of felt like there was not a lot of emotion going on. It was a sold out crowd, but it wasn't anything particularly special about the game. I mean, Dortmund were pretty poor. The summary from Kicker just says that it was not a very special or exciting game between the two rivals. Bayern put in an average performance against a weak Dortmund. I mean, it's kind of very underwhelming, the whole game. I don't know if you saw it the same way.
I mean, I just don't think there's anything to get excited about, because there's nothing new. Bayern winning the title again, which has happened so many times before consecutively, and then beating Dortmund at home, which is almost just as routine as them beating any other side, if not more so. I suppose the only thing you can say from Dortmund's perspective...
Apart from Mönchengladbach.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, Bayern seem to get a better game from the likes of Gladbach. Leverkusen, it's hat and mash, but like Gladbach, sometimes Hoffenheim, those sort of sides seem to offer Bayern more of a game than Dortmund do, particularly away from home. The only thing you can really say for Dortmund is that it's slightly more dignified. The amount of hammerings they've had at the Allianz Arena the last few years almost become a routine in itself. But I think it's sort of indicative of the main issue that Bayern weren't great, but they were still the better team, and they still are the best team in the league, despite not maybe hitting the heights that they have the past few years. There's just that more of an underlying problem that supposedly the next best challenger is nowhere closer to Bayern than they were in the past few years when Bayern were stronger.
Yeah, I think I don't know. It's difficult to know what to say, Roy, because it's like this game kind of just confirmed what we all spend quite a lot of time trying to deny, that there's just a... I mean, like I said, Bayern played pretty ordinarily. And, you know, Dortmund, we know that they're extremely hit with injuries at the moment. But, I mean, if it would have been nice for the last sort of meaningful game of the season. I mean, not that this was meaningful. Dortmund still were never going to catch Bayern. If they would, if it had been a bit more of a spectacle, been a bit more interesting. But it just felt like a bit more of a procession, really. Dortmund really poor defensively, especially. This is the seventh time in a row that Bayern have beat Dortmund, which is, you know, detracts further from the fact that it's becoming increasingly less of a rivalry and more of a sort of regularity. I don't know if you've got anything to say. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts on the penalty were. If we want to talk about the actual game for a second, you know, that was at 2-1. If the game's 2-2, Emre Can probably scoring another penalty. Then if you think that would maybe change the narrative of the whole game, or if you just think that the game was kind of a so-called dead rubber before it even started.
I mean, when was the last time we actually watched a good Bayern versus Dortmund game? Maybe that Super Cup game 2 years ago, or well, the start of the last season, sorry. That was a bit more exciting. Can't remember the last time I've actually got excited watching a game. The one in December, in the Hinrunde, it was a bit better, but there's just never, they just, I think you go, they're going into that game now and it's just like this curse of they're never going to actually beat Bayern anymore. And this is why, like, a lot of change has to happen with Dortmund, I think, with some of their players. I think we spoke with this privately, George, about, like, players coming and going out of that squad to kind of get rid of that Dortmund side that just haven't been able to do it in the last 10 years, to be honest. The game in general, I mean, it was a penalty for me. I remember when I first saw it, I wasn't too sure, but then once you saw the angles and the angles the receiver would have saw on the VAR monitors at the side of the pitch, you kind of really struggled to understand why he didn't give it when he said later on that, oh yeah, probably should have gave that. But it's just... you are just still wondering what that defense is doing. It's changed so much this season. I think it's changed more this season than it has, and like throughout the course of the year than it has in any other seasons as well. There's been no stability in that backline at all. Just every couple of games, there's someone new coming in. There's maybe two, three players coming in. I just think they could be doing better than having, you know, like Marius Wolf on the right hand side, and you know Zagadou is just not really. Not really been at it, has he? I mean, I know he had a big long spell out injured, but it's just not been good enough. And you're kind of relying on Akanji to do a lot. Guerrero's a fantastic player going forward, but defensively, is he as good as anyone else in the left back position? In the Bundesliga, probably not. So it's just those defensive frailties have just completely done Dortmund in again. And it's just made that game not exciting because Haaland wasn't really in it in the first half. I mean, I may be talking about Mars here. I'm sorry. Yeah, that is not unlike yourself. But Dortmund didn't have a shot on target in the first half, did they?
No, and I think Bayern only had two.
It wasn't even that exciting both ways, but I'm pretty sure Dortmund really struggled in the first half as well to even get near the Bayern goal. So, like, it was just really disappointing. Well, not a disappointing game to watch, because sometimes those games, you know, you get some kind of interest and some kind of excitement out of it. But I don't know. For me, there's a long line of, I don't know how much we're going to talk about Dortmund on this kind of side, this on this actual episode. But there's just a spine of that team that I feel like if they're stuck in this whirlwind of they're never going to beat Bayern, and maybe if you get rid of that, I'm not saying they have to chuck everyone, but like, if you kind of get rid of that team that's got that negative mindset into these games all the time, then you're never going to get, you're never going to rectify it, and you're never going to turn it around either. So we'll see what happens with Dortmund and the new defenders coming in. But again, it's really difficult to say if it's going to be any better. But I don't know if that's what you wanted me to answer, because I feel like I answered quite a few different points there.
I would say you sort of hit the nail on the head a little bit when you're talking about changing the defence. Just in terms of their changes, so no matter what lineup they play or defence, it's just not going to be good enough, because you've got You've got Hummels, who's probably past his best. Zagadou, who's just not good enough. Akanji, who I don't particularly rate either. I think you sort of mentioned him in more favourable terms, like he's probably their best centre back, but he's certainly prone to errors as well. Then you've got Emre Can, who's been played out of position as well, often in centre back. And then you've got their solution at the end of the transfer under the summer for more depth in the defensive positions was to sign Pogracic on loan from Wolfsburg, where he didn't really get a game. And that signing just hasn't made sense because he's barely played. And with the problems that they've had this season, the fact that he's not played, it shows how little they rate him. And then at the full-back positions, they seem to be struggling. Wolf having to play a lot of the time. I think Meunier, when he's played, I think I've criticised him in the past, but he's actually quite improved a lot, I would say, when he's played this season. But I mean, he's really not been fit long enough to make much of an impact. It probably has been one of the better players. I just think if you're to talk about Dortmund as serious challengers, there's previous seasons where you look at the squad and you think, yeah, they should be closer to Bayern. Wasn't that long ago under Favre that they were really close to winning the title itself. But I mean, now I just look at the squad and don't think it's good enough to even get into that position anyway, because there's either average players or players that are just past their best.
Yeah, I think they're all valid points about Dortmund, but I think we're gonna work from top to bottom here, and we're gonna start with Bayern, because you know it's kind of difficult to talk about Dortmund without sort of talking about the other competitions. So we'll do that a bit later. But let's start with Bayern to start with. I mean, one of you mentioned earlier about this season not quite hitting the heights of last season. Certainly, insofar as they were knocked out of the Pokal in pretty spectacular fashion, 5-0 to Mönchengladbach, and knocked out of the Champions League to Villarreal. So, you know, in that sense, it could be, you know, seen as somewhat of a failure. But actually, looking back on last season, and under the great Hansi Flick, who was, you know, lauded so much this time last year, they've got 4 more points than they did at this point last year. They've got a goal difference. There's 18 goals better. They've basically better in all categories than they were last year. But for some reason, you don't see Nagelsmann being talked about in the same sort of way that Flick was, probably because Flick took over from Niko Kovac, who was doing a terrible job, whereas Nagelsmann's just continued more of the same. But I think there's something to be said for the job he's done, because, you know, despite the knockouts in the Pokal and the Champions League, they've had a lot of injuries, a lot of COVID cases. They had the old controversy with Joshua Kimmich. They were a last Bundesliga team, I believe, to play with a full stadium because they're in Bavaria, apart from Augsburg, but that doesn't fucking count because they're not a real team. This is also the first season of them being led exclusively by Ole Kahn and Hasan Salihamidžić. So there were actually obstacles for them to navigate, and none less so than actually the fact that if you look at the transfers, you know, they brought in Marcel Sabitzer, who's not been incredible, brought back Sven Ulreich, Omar Richards from Bob Haggis's old haunt, Reading, and Deo Upamecano brought with him also. Nagelsmann brought him from Leipzig, but they've also lost Jerome Boateng on a free, David Alaba and Javi Martinez all for free. They all left at the end of their contracts, and those three were a real sort of core spine of the team, and you actually had the feeling that might, all those things considered, you know, the new leadership of Kahn and Salihamidžić, and you know, loss of especially a player like David Alaba. I mean, you saw in the Real Madrid game against Man City yesterday that once he was gone, that he has such a commanding presence in organising a defence that's really world-class. And, you know, bringing in Upamecano as a replacement, you feared might not be too successful. Well, in all honesty, it hasn't been, because Upamecano has actually been quite underwhelming at times, very, very much prone to a mistake. But yet, they're, like I said, they're 4 points better off than they were last season. I mean, I don't really know what that says about the competition. I don't know if what that says about Nagelsmann. Is this even something that's worth discussing? Should we be praising Nagelsmann? Because we don't, and you also, you don't hear Nagelsmann discussed too much in German or in, you know, British circles, because it's kind of like he's just continuing the good job that Hansi Flick did, right? But the fact is that he has done a points wise a better job, but he's probably tarnished by the fact that he's only going to win the Bundesliga and nothing more this season, albeit that's also what happened last year.
You always take it for granted that Bayern are going to win the league, and you sort of forget the amount of transition that you mentioned there, Salihamidzic and Kahn being at the forefront together for the first time, and the amount of players that have changed in the squad that they've lost and not really adequately replaced, I don't think. Just looking at the squad, there's no way you could say that that's the strongest squad in Europe when a couple of years ago when they won the Champions League, you could have justifiably said that they were the best team. I mean, I thought 2020 they were the best team in the world under Hansi Flick, and that's probably why he was still so highly regarded last season when they maybe weren't quite so convincing. They get knocked out of the cup, get knocked out of the Champions League. But because of the previous season where they won the Champions League and the league so convincingly, had that bit of credit left. You also don't really consider that Nagelsmann coming into this season still hadn't won a major trophy in his managerial career, which he now has, obviously, and deserves some credit for that with the amount of upheaval that there's been at the club and him still being a relatively inexperienced manager at the top level. But he's managed to win the title with games to spare and very comfortably.
I think you've got to remember as well that Bayern were going through a lot just at November, December time as well, like off the pitch. Like, you kind of touched on them all a wee bit, George, when you were kind of introducing it. But remember, they were like threatening to cut players' wages for refusing to get vaccinated. They had that AGM that was an absolute shit show, that the fans were going all that, like Ilihunas and things like that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like I said, the Bayern AGM is usually a shit show most of the time, but because the organized fan scene is pretty well distanced, ideologically at least, from the directors, the Vorstand. But let's just stay on the current squad for the moment, and then we'll sort of look at the bigger picture. I mean, the main way that you could see this changing is if the core of the team is ripped out, because there's a really good point that you make, Colin, that the Bayern actually do not have a very good squad at all. It actually suggests that the Leipzig squad is probably a lot deeper than them. They can seamlessly change their squad pretty easily, week to week, especially with their progression in the Europa League, and not have too much of a change in their form. Whereas Bayern are pretty much reliant on not having too many injuries and keeping the same sort of 14 or so players, because after that, once you get beyond that, the quality is not exactly brilliant. So I think the core spine of the team, much like Chelsea's 2012 winning team with Petr Cech, John Terry, Frank Lampard and Didier Drogba, is Manuel Neuer, Thomas Müller and Robert Lewandowski, who all have contracts that run until 2023 and have not been renewed. After the game on Saturday, Lewandowski asked about his future, said that something will happen soon, but he didn't confirm what that was. But he said that there've been talks of the like. Obviously, there's a lot of links with Barcelona above all. And said Hasan Salihamidzic, the sporting director, said to Sky 90 on Sunday that there was no chance of a move. But he did say that the talks are ongoing. He seemed reasonably confident, but you'd expect him to be like that. I mean, the thing about Lewandowski, without staying like the obvious here, is that he hasn't won the Ballon d'Or, and probably the reason for a move to Barcelona, given the fact that you know, he's still seemingly in his prime despite his relative age, is that he probably wants to go after that Ballon d'Or, right? And it's become obvious to him that he can't win that at Bayern, and he's showing no signs of holding up. So, you know, if Lewandowski leaves that team, you're starting to think, you know, he's not a German player. If he doesn't have any reason to stay in Germany, especially, he might want a new challenge for sure. I'd say that Thomas Müller is probably more likely to sign his contract. Manuel Neuer the same. I mean, he's the captain. But I mean, like, it's a good point as to why those three core players have not had their contracts expired and they've run out next year. Equally, you know, why Lewandowski, despite how brilliant he is in his age, hasn't been offered a longer contract. Maybe he might feel slightly undervalued at the club, which is kind of weird to imagine, really. But I mean, realistically, Roy, that's probably the only way that Bayern will get any weaker if those players leave, because they don't have a lot in the way of youth coming through, really. The only way they're going to make their side any younger is if they sign the likes of Florian Wirtz or someone, but even that's not guaranteed that he'd go to Bayern. I mean, Kai Havertz, you know, decided to not go to Bayern. It's becoming increasingly a trend as the Bundesliga becomes weaker that the best talents in Germany don't want to go to Bayern, despite them being the best team. So maybe that's probably where the biggest problem for Bayern lays is rebuilding after the Müller, Neuer, Lewandowski era.
Yeah, and I would say there is some young players coming through. You've obviously Stanisic has been playing quite often. Omar Richards has came in now and again, not much. Tanguy Nianzou, he came on but got hooked off at halftime one game because Nagelsmann was like, he needs to learn from his mistakes, sort of situation. But they're
that
not.
Was that was because he thought that he should have been sent off.
Yeah.
Which is quite like a ballsy move.
Yeah, I know, it was a good move, but he also said it was to like a learning curve for him as well, to kind of realise not to do that. So, but that's not positions you're talking about either. So that's the thing, like, there's, if you look at the forward area, like, you've got Müller, I mean, Coleman's not that as old as people maybe think he is, Gnabry and Sané as well, but there's no number nine, Choupo-Moting's not the youngest in the squad either, there's no real youth striker coming through, and I would say the same with the midfield as well. There's not really much youth coming through there either. So I think it's going to be an interesting transfer window to see what direction they take it, because if they're thinking ahead to these guys not being here, I mean, there will be a time when those big heads won't be at Bayern anymore and they need to kind of plan for that now. And I think they planned for it well in the defensive area when they knew that they were going to lose most of the defence in the past couple of seasons. And they've done that quite well, even with Niklas Süle leaving. They're still quite apt in the defensive, I would say. They could probably do with another centre-half coming in, but I think it's the next couple of transfer windows will be interesting to see where they take the attacking mainframe, because at the moment, you're thinking it's starting to get a bit brittle and quite sparse as well. So I think it'll be really interesting to see where he wants to take it. But Nagelsmann's a good track record of the clubs he's worked at where he's managed to bring through. I mean, it might not always be his decision to bring in the players in, but the players he's worked with, and especially running through that Leipzig model as well, like the Red Bull, Rasenballsport model at Leipzig, that maybe he'll try and see if he can help implement that side as well. But I think with Salihamidzic, and it could be an interesting next couple of transfer windows, just to see where they actually take it.
Yeah, I do think it's actually a good point, though, that I don't think it's kind of counterintuitive in a way, that the more Bayern become dominant in the Bundesliga and the more it's obvious that you're just going to win the league, the less attractive it is to go there, especially from, you know, recruiting talents from abroad as well as domestically. I mean, some of the signings that you see Bayern making the 2010s are probably not as likely. I mean, like I said, I mean, it doesn't seem like the big one that I can remember is Kai Havertz not going to Bayern. And it looks like Florian Wirtz might do the same. There's a number of the biggest talents in Europe seem to not always be linked with Bayern for financial and probably sporting reasons. I know that their number one target at the moment is Ryan Gravenbach at Ajax, but he's like a central midfielder, right? So, I mean, that's kind of surprised me given that Goretzka and Kimmich are like the core of the Bayern team for the next 10 years or so. So it's like I said, it will be interesting to see where they go. But we're kind of just looking for faults here, right? I mean, they are excellent right now, and you know, we're just kind of assuming that we know that one day the likes of, you know, Neuer, Lewandowski, Müller are not going to be at Bayern, and they're going to have to build for the future at one point. I'm not sure they've done that adequately enough right now. Don't know if any of you two saw the slightly odd scenes on Monday morning where Nagelsmann was walking around the Sabinerstrasse, the training ground of FC Bayern, with a loudspeaker echoing the sentiments of Hasan Salihamidžić on the weekend. He was telling all the workers FC Bayern that next season will be better. That's a promise. And some very, very, I mean, Salihamidžić kind of looks a bit like a Bond villain. He was talking very coldly on German TV on the weekend, saying that that we won't leave any stone unturned and we were going to attack the season more than any next season. And he promises that the same won't happen in Villarreal. He even compared the loss of Villarreal he called it the finale de home reloaded. So when they lost to Chelsea, and then it just set in motion basically this last 10 years. So the thing is that there's definitely a feeling around Bayern that this season wasn't so good, despite them winning the Bundesliga. So you almost think the next season they're probably going to be even better. And Salihamidžić named Kimmich as one who's going to really lead the team forward. Because, you know, we know what kind of mentality he's got, at least as far as football's concerned. And yeah, you do kind of think that they're going to be even stronger next year. I don't know if you sort of agree with that, Colin. I mean, that goes in the short term and the long term. You always see whenever Bayern lose a game, you know that they're almost certainly going to win the next game. And it seems like they're pretty unhappy with the way this season went, so you imagine they're going to come out all guns blazing this and the coming season.
I don't know, because they've won the league this year. You could say that they'll probably have added determination to go further and win the Pokal, because it has been a good couple of years now that they haven't won that. But in terms of the Champions League, I just don't see them matching the strength of the likes of Man City and Liverpool at the moment. The squad probably needs a lot of work for that to happen, because, like Roy mentioned, so many of the sort of spine of the squad from the last few years is now aging. There's uncertainty in terms of contracts, definitely transition occurring in terms of the defence. Likes of Alaba leaving, like it's already been said, Boateng, Martinez, but Zula's going to be leaving as well in the summer, who's been a mainstay of the side in the last few years again. So I think they need a lot of work in the transfer market. It's not really just a case of the Bayern mentality and like coming back stronger after being knocked down. I don't see that being possible in the matching the performance of, say, the season that they were under Flick, just because the gap between the top teams in Europe and the sort of next tier is growing, I would say, because of the money that's involved, particularly the Premier League. The teams at the top of that division are just so far apart in terms of money being spent compared to the rest of the continent. I just don't see them matching that unless there's a lot of investment over the summer and they manage to get the targets. But like you say, it's no longer the number one attraction. You consider a lot of players would consider going to the likes of Chelsea or Liverpool above Bayern these days. I mean, that's just the way it is in terms of the attractiveness of the leagues, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a kind of weird paradox going on, that it's kind of the responsibility falls on the likes of Dortmund and, dare I say, Leipzig to make the league more attractive, because, you know, as much as players want to win things, they don't want to go somewhere where they're just going to win things. I mean, you sort of think about the prime 2010s Clásicos. You want to be part of a team like Real Madrid or Barcelona that's fighting each year instead of just, you know, pissing the league every single year. I mean, only once in the last 10 years has a team finished within 10 or less points of Bayern in the end of the title, which is just a ridiculous statistic. But I refer you back to a quote from Hans-Joachim Watzke, who said that the worst thing to do was to irritate Bayern back in 2012. That's definitely kind of set in motion Bayern changing their mentality. I think it kind of losing the 2012 Champions League final and losing the league that year was a first step.
A big part of it was the Pokal final that year. Dortmund beat Bayern 5-2, and
yeah.
No, I think it was actually the league encounter at the end of the season. Like, Robin missed a penalty, and then Subotic was in Robin's face and all that. And I think at the cup final they were gloating, and a lot of the Bayern, I don't know, just Bayern faces really.
So that was really a turning point. They took that whole thing very seriously, and it all traces back to 2012. Really, I mean, like I said, the fewest amount of points they've had in a season in the last 10 years is 78, and the previous record for that was 81, held by Dortmund in 2012, and I think they broke that like 6 times. Their combined margin of victory over the past 10 years is 137 points from the second place, which is like an average of 13.7 points off the top of my head. So it's definitely, I mean, we need like this pattern to change for sure. So let's come on to Dortmund. We were, you know, talking about them earlier. I think what's interesting, we talk about transfers of Bayern, is that I think the future of this kind of duel between Bayern and Dortmund could lay in the decisions of two people I have in mind. The first one is Karim Adeyemi, who I think is more likely to choose Dortmund than Leipzig, but he is a potential successor of Lewandowski at Bayern, but I think he's probably going to join Dortmund. And the other one is Nico Schlotterbeck, who seems to be undecided between Bayern and Dortmund. I think he definitely wants to stay in the Bundesliga. And, you know, they've already got Niklas Süle, who's for sure going to clean up that defence a little bit. I sort of think if you have a core, because, I mean, Gregor Kobel's been very impressive this year, at least in my eyes, then if you have a core in that side with Süle and Schlotterbeck and then Guerrero on one side, and if they can at one point sign a decent right-back, that would suit them quite well. But if you think if they can get Adeyemi and Schlotterbeck, then that might, they have to, the thing is, what I'm trying to say here in a roundabout way is that they have to make the right decisions. They have to get their transfers right, because they simply can't afford to sign Adeyemi and Schlotterbeck or not sign them sign them and they don't work out, or not sign them and they go to Bayern. So that's sort of a lot hinges on their decision making in the next year or two.
I would say it's quite encouraging that they're finally focusing on defence with their transfer activity. They seem to, for so long, just been focusing on young attacking players. But if they've got Süle already, if they do get Schlotterbeck, that's a massive upgrade on the centre back options they've got already. And it doesn't always work out for these players. I mean, Süle is a different matter because he's come from Bayern, but for players that have come from like sort of a mid table club, moving to a big club, they aren't always able to replicate their performances. It's definitely a step forward from the options that they've had this year defensively, because I think it's about 5 or 6 years overdue that they buy a decent centre-back player, and Hummels has come back. It has been good in flashes, but I've not been totally convinced during the spell that he's been a great option for them. So that's encouraging, I would say, for one. And then Adeyemi, really highly rated for a young player. It's also quite encouraging if he's considering Dortmund as an option to come to. Like that, those players as a start would be a really good transfer window and a massive improvement on what they did last year.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, building on something that I asked you guys, a claim that doesn't need to be repeated just yet, that I made in our group chat yesterday. It's a claim that a hot take that is not backed up with any data or information right now. But do you guys? I just have the feeling that Dortmund only recruit in the Bundesliga. They only recruit German players that play abroad. I don't know if that make sense to anyone. Do you feel like when they're trying to sign like a centre back or a striker? Like Adeyemi obviously plays in Salzburg, but he's German. They're pretty much Austria's next door, but you don't often see them looking elsewhere. That might be wrong, but that's just a
Daniel Malin last year. I mean, they've got
get the two young boys from PSG as well.
Holland.
Yeah, but they were like, they signed them as like youngsters though. They don't seem to make marquee signings from like the Premier League or Ligue 1. But again,
Bundesliga players
came from Madrid. Renier, how do you say that? He's not a marquee,
he's on loan and hardly plays. But yeah.
To be fair, I think Bundesliga is a cheaper market than, say, a similar standard of player in the Premier League.
Realistically, the players we're talking about, like Adeyemi, Schlotterbeck and stuff, they could just as easily go to like Newcastle or any other comparative team, like, I don't know, Aston Villa or any other team with money that's pretty uninspiring in the Premier League. So that's probably a completely other discussion, really.
Well, they went to Birmingham City and probably found the best player.
That's true. Maybe my hot take wasn't safe.
Dortmund don't have the same budget. Is it the sort of teams that they're aspiring to be on par with? They probably don't have the funds to match that, so they do have to be a bit smarter with their transfers. I mean, they're always renowned when Sven Mislintat was part of the club, how good their scouting was, signing players like Kagawa from abroad. These like really good players.
Yeah, that's because
they're not going to be able to.
That's what I mean. I didn't really mean marquee signings. I mean like good finds that you find outside of Germany. Sorry?
It's been a while since they did that, because you remember when the players like Barrios and Deddy coming in, Santana, all these kind of like players and like Kagawa, like Colin mentioned there, you don't really see the Bashakovsky, you don't really see Lewandowski as well at the time. Yeah. He was coming from like Poznan in Poland, right. And look where he became. You don't really see them doing that anymore. You see them taking players like Brandt, who's already pretty much consolidated as a very decent Bundesliga player. Thorgan Hazard as well coming in. Those kind of players in the last couple of seasons. The only really exciting young players, I think, is what you're kind of meaning, as you know, that came through that was different was Haaland, but he was touted to be one of the best in the world anyway. And Bellingham also was touted to be best in the world. There's not been a young, interesting find, really.
That's essentially my point.
Why I don't really like signing players like Hummels and Meunier, because it's just sort of already established players. Meunier wasn't really, despite him playing for PSG in Belgium, I don't think he was really even that highly rated at the time. He's not a player that's going to develop a lot. Moving forward, I feel like Dortmund's success has come from like these sort of gems that they managed to unearth and managing to develop them, and also building on players coming through the youth academy. I mean, not really sure in terms of youth prospects if it's the same as it was 10 years ago. I don't really see the same amount of players coming through. I mean, they've got the likes of Mokoko, who broke through last year in the first team, scored a couple of goals. But
Ansgar Knauf as well is one that's been doing well at Frankfurt. But,
maybe I've just proved myself wrong.
You actually kind of wonder why he's away in Frankfurt when he's been playing so well, and they can kind of, you know. I was talking about this recently. I don't understand why he's away in Frankfurt when he could probably be doing a job for them, because he's clearly proven it. Okay, maybe you need to. They needed to see you could do, and they didn't really want to take the chance on him, but they're kind of a bit wasted. But you see a couple of the guys come out. I think you see at the end of every season they do bring a couple. I would say they do bring a couple in. Tiga's got a chance at the end of last season. Okay, didn't really get his chance this year. And then you saw that the young guy Rota coming in last week, and he scored. So maybe, yeah, but
that's because Walter came in because they had like no players. I'm not talking about players that you just I'm not talking about 18-year-olds that you just pick out of the youth team because all your players are injured. I'm talking about you finding your good players across Europe and across the world that actually turn out.
I mean, considering like the spine of the team that got to the Champions League final 2013, that was like Götze, Royce, and so like young German players, but then also the international finds, like the Polish contingent that they had, Kagwa. I don't think Kagwa was actually there at that point. I think he had left to go to Man United, but he had sort of been part of the side that built towards that. That was really where a lot of their success came from. That combination. There wasn't really an established player in that team that had been at another big European club. Like, I keep talking about Meunier, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, the thing is, like I said, they have to be clever with that. They can't afford to piss away a load of money on transfers that aren't successful. They need to be a lot more shrewd. And I'd say that they're probably, like you said, of like signing players like Pongracic for like no apparent reason.
Players like Pongracic and even Marius Wolf, like players from mid-table Bundesliga teams aren't going to take them where they want to go.
Yeah, they seem to sign players that are very much falling upwards in their career trajectory, and not players that are especially there on any sort of merit. But that I think Schlotterbeck would be a really good signing. But let me ask,
you can even compare in the same year. Bayern went and found Alphonso Davies, while Dortmund went and signed Nico Schultz from Hoffenheim. So it's kind of like comparable, and I'm not calling out Nico Schultz or anything, but like it's kind of your point that the Dortmund are going used to go find young talents abroad and bring them in, nurture them, whereas like Bayern have went and done that with Davies, and you've got Nico Schultz sitting on the bench every now and again, both bought in 2019. So it kind of makes your point there as well, I suppose. Just not throwing Nico Schultz under the bus.
Yeah, let's leave Nico Schultz alone. I think he gets enough slack as he is. He doesn't need it from us. But let me read one quote for you, and you guys tell me what you think of this. It's from one Jurgen Klopp, formerly of Dortmund, of course. He appraises the current situation by saying that there are two reasons for Bayern's dominance. One, of course, which we've already detailed, is simply the quality they have. The other is that the pursuers, the teams chasing them, steal points from each other. The other teams are probably too close to each other. That means, you know, your Dortmunds, your Leverkusens, your Leipzigs, your Frankfurts occasionally. And I don't tend to agree with Jurgen Klopp on too many things. So I think he's got a point that the chasing pack, Sozagen, are very close to each other, especially as you see Leipzig, I would say, get almost better than Dortmund at times. They finished above them last season, didn't they? Leipzig finished in second, Dortmund finished in third. Is that right? I think so. Anyway, so you know that as that gets even closer, that group, and then you get the likes of Freiburg. I mean, Freiburg might even make it to the Champions League this year. I mean, last year the top three was at this point in last year, at least, was Leipzig, Wolfsburg, and Frankfurt. And this year it's Dortmund, Leverkusen, and Leipzig. So two different teams. Then essentially, yeah, it's that chasing group is a lot better. And unlike my last sort of hot take, this one's actually backed up with evidence. I mean, in the past five seasons, the gap between the second and fifth place team in the Bundesliga has been 10 points, whereas in England and Spain, the average gap has been 17 points. So as we often make the point on the podcast, that the attraction of the Bundesliga lay not in the title race, but in the, you know, race for the Champions League, race for the Europa League, the race against the drop. It is true that, that it's also something to be said that all the other teams probably pertaining to 50 plus one, there isn't a lot between them. Whereas in the champion, in the Premier League, the top sort of six or so are kind of in stratospherically different to the rest of the league. And that's probably got something to do with the fact that Bayern are always so dominant, they take points of each other, whereas Bayern simply don't because they're too good. I don't know if you have a take on that, if you would do, agree or disagree.
I would agree with that. I suppose that there's not a similar gap in quality in both of the leagues if you're comparing it to the Premier League, but it just, there's probably just more teams in the top bracket in the Premier League than there is in the Bundesliga. And that's particularly why you see the difference in European competition, because Germany, whereas Germany only has one top team, England, there's several, and they're far more likely to compete in Europe. But so in terms of the enjoyment from watching the league and the fixtures, if you're going to say that Bayern are the only team that is so far ahead of everyone else, then you would say that the other fixtures in the league are more enjoyable and unpredictable, and that's something that isn't really championed, I don't think, enough. Because it's something that's long been long been levelled against the league, when really it's just that top team that is so far ahead of everyone else, but the other fixtures are enjoyable, and the top four race and the relegation fight is very exciting.
Yeah, and no, I think that's a very good point, Colin. I mean, you know, like I said, we've said so many times that I don't think anyone really watches the Bundesliga, at least that has an active interest in the Bundesliga, just to watch Bayern win every game, but rather to see the really close fight for Europe, and you know, the, you know, all the interesting clubs that are fighting against the drop, you know, namely your Stuttgarts, your Herthas, but that's kind of often a difficult sell, because people will be like, why the fuck would we care that Stuttgart might get relegated, you know, like people in the UK. And that's kind of reflected in the fact that the BT Sport Bundesliga deal wasn't renewed and was replaced with a pretty half-assed deal with Sky in the UK. Interesting to note that the Bundesliga's revenue has actually fallen 10% in the last year. You know, partly because of the stadiums not being full, but that's partly, like I said, to do with the decline in marketing rights being sold, as people are increasingly less attracted by the Bundesliga. And you've got to say that the main reason for that, you know, alongside the fact that there are teams in the league that are not as interesting to people, you're talking your Hoffenheims, your Augsburgs, your Leipzigs, there's other clubs that I might say that might offend other people, so I'll stop there. But primarily, it's because of Bayern's dominance. So like we keep saying, the more they keep winning, the more it's not just damaging to, well, it's to underpin the point, it is really, well, it's damaging to themselves in a way, like we've said, that, you know, it's making Bayern a less attractive team to play for, but it's also damaging the league as a whole. So I put the million-dollar question to one of you two clowns. What do we do to fix this? I mean, we've managed to go through the whole podcast without mentioning 50 plus one. I mean, we've talked about that a million times, dedicated a whole podcast to it once or twice. But I mean, how, I suppose the better question is, how dangerous is Bayern's dominance to the league if it really can't be changed?
I mean, you're starting to see the falling interest in the league in terms of TV rights. Well, in the UK anyway, I don't believe it's probably at the same point that it was a few years ago. I feel like there was a sort of high, a peak period for German football interest in the UK, where it was seen as a model to follow and emulate in terms of the... I mean, it still is in terms of the fan experience, but there was a point where it was in terms of like football and youth production of players and the national team as well, around about the time that there was an old German Champions League final, World Cup, Germany were victorious in 2014, but it doesn't really have the same international reputation, I would say, did back then, which I would say is a problem itself for the league and its marketability, which we've already alluded to is bad for TV viewership, but also players as well. We've said earlier on the podcast, like, I mean, you've seen Lewandowski not really get the appreciation that he deserves, which may tempt him to move away from Germany, and less big players are looking to make the move, even to Bayern themselves. So that's probably a problem, mainly in terms of the competitiveness in Europe. It's probably something that I'm caring less and less about, though, the competitiveness in Europe. Like, if Bayern had to become weaker for the league to become more competitive, then so be it. But I suppose it feels like you can't have both. You can either have a competitive Bayern in Europe, which allows for a German Bundesliga winner of the Champions League, but or you can have a weaker Bayern, but other teams more likely to win the league. I suppose it's trying to get a balance between that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the other thing that we always say, though, is that, I mean, it's all well and good saying that it's not interesting for people in the UK and across the world. But I think if you'd ask most Bundesliga fans, they'd say that although the Bayern being dominant is annoying and to some extent boring, primarily the fact that they have control of their clubs, the fact that they have control of the atmosphere that's created within the stadiums, that they are able to have a much closer relationship with the club and the players, there's something that they wouldn't want to sacrifice for, you know, Dortmund to win the league, or, you know, obviously not for Leipzig to win the league, and that's, it kind of comes down to a question of how you assess how attractive a league is not maybe, like we say, how competitive the title race is, because more and more there is just a difference in money. You know, that's why that's why the Super League existed, is that you do get teams that are breaking away from their leagues in terms of financially. But, you know, inherently the fact that the Bundesliga has the 50+1 and it has a closer connection to the fans is wherein the attraction lies, and people in Germany especially are probably willing to deal with, you know, years more of Bayern's dominance and, you know, less attraction from the UK if it means that their clubs essentially stay the same and stay within their own hands.
I would say if you ask most German fans, they're far more interested in the issues of their own club, because I suppose it's a bit similar, like me and Roy supporting a Scottish team. We don't really care about the fact that the title race in Scotland can only be won by one of two teams, because we're really invested in the fortunes of our own clubs. And it's probably the same in Germany. They're more concerned with the state of their own clubs rather than who wins the league, unless you're, say, a Dortmund fan, who's probably has higher expectations of their own club. So really, that is important, because the opinions of the domestic fans in Germany, fans within Germany, is more important than it would be elsewhere, because there is the fan power. I would say that there's, if it was another league, you would be more concerned that there would be a, more of a focus on the wants of the international fan base. But I would say because there is 50 plus one and the power that fans hold in Germany, and they're more willing to uphold that than take measures to try and bring more investment into the game, then I think that there's reason to be optimistic that that can still be maintained.
You know, I'd look at it in the same way as, like, I wouldn't pretend I know anything that's really going on in Italy, but you saw the last, what was it, 9 years in a row, Juventus won the league, and then no one really seemed to take much interest, and it kind of got to that stage where the Serie A wasn't very exciting. But like, if you look at it this year, this was the year that Juventus kind of lost their kind of spine for everything, and they lost the manager, and they weren't doing as well, and now the league just came and just erupted again, and everyone's talking about the Serie A again, like it's a very exciting league. Do you not think the Bundesliga is kind of going through that kind of stage at the moment where Bayern are winning everything? The league, I think the league's not been as good this year as it has been. Like, overall, I think it's not been as exciting. I don't think most games, like, I would have told you last year, oh yeah, I wouldn't mind just sitting down watching Augsburg versus Bochum, but like this year, it's actually not been as exciting as you want it to be. I think it's just the realization of this year that Bayern are just Bayern, and the rest of the league are just start playing catch up in a league that they can't play catch up in. And you're looking at it going, is it going to get better in the next couple of years? And I don't know if that was kind of the question you were going to pose next, George, but like at the moment, you're kind of hoping that Bayern fall. I think all three of us can kind of admit that we don't have any issues with Bayern Munich, or we don't have any issues with Bayern winning the league. It's not something that we completely are against. But
I have issues with Bayern Munich, but they're not.
I realise especially that,
they're not especially to do with them winning the league, more so them receiving 25 million euros a year from Qatar, and also being extremely arrogant and having a lot of old white men with outdated views working for them, and also the fact that they're not even the oldest nor the biggest club in Munich, but. That's,
I mean, I was taking it from the. I thought we were kind of talking about the football inside at the moment, so that's why I was meaning from that side. But of course, all those factors and points are very true. So I wouldn't take that away from you. But I was meaning like, you know,
whilst Bayern were somewhat scraping over the line against Dortmund at the weekend, 1860 were pissing themselves to a 6-0 away win in Duisburg. So I think that's kind of all you need to know there.
Getting their payback to the Zebras for that goal about a year ago.
Yes,
during the recording.
Of course, and also because I don't know if anyone saw this, but the Duisburg Ultras spray painted the 1860 bus of the players whilst they were staying overnight in the the lovely city of Duisburg, Germany's poorest city. Anyway. I think that that's probably enough nonsense for today. I hope that we have not just repeated ourselves the whole time and repeated what we say every time we talk about Bayern and Dortmund and the Bundesliga, but it is probably a pretty apt time to discuss these things because it is an issue that, like we say, we don't care too much about. But when you see stories appearing in, you know, the Guardian and BBC back in the UK about Bayern and stuff, you probably think that is indicative of the fact that something's gone wrong, that the only thing that the Bundesliga is being written about in the English speaking world is what's wrong with it, and not all the things that we like to celebrate about it that are so right with it. So yeah, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.